You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, part two of our UFC 257 post-fight coverage here on MMAfighting.com. This is the post-fight show. We're going to hear from all of you. We heard from all the tastemakers from tonight's event. We heard from Michael Chandler. We heard from Conor McGregor. We heard from Dustin Poirier. We heard from Dana White. And now it is time to hear from all of you. Thank you for joining us, especially you guys on the East Coast, 2:42 a.m., you crazy people. We appreciate it. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the Prince of Positivity, Alex K. Lee. Hello, sir.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. It's early. What are we doing? 3 hours? Three-hour post-fight show?
For an event like this, it would make sense. We're not going to do that, but it would make sense. And then we have E. Casey Lydon, producer extraordinaire, joining us as well. Duval!
Oh, yes. Shout out to Duval!
Yes. And I'm the only one wearing a suit. I hung up on our post-fight chat at the end, after the Q&A case. Like, everyone kind of like dress up for the post-fight show. And then I was like, all right, I got to go. And apparently dress up was like, just wear a shirt with a collar on it, which I had already done anyways. But I'm way overdressed for the occasion. It is what it is.
No, you look fantastic. You look fantastic.
Yeah. I had to grab like something before my wife went to sleep. And this is the first thing I grabbed. So here we are. Listen, if you're here watching right now, this is your show, okay? We've talked about a lot of this stuff. We want to hear what you're thinking in regards to Poirier's big win, Michael Chandler's outstanding debut. Anything that you want to talk about, let us know. We'll answer your questions for the next 30 to 40 minutes, and then we'll all try to catch some shut-eye. But AK, before the questions come in, your thoughts on Dustin Poirier's big win over Conor McGregor, because what an outstanding performance, a shining moment for the Diamonds. What do you think?
Amazing. Amazing. Shut me up. I tell you, I thought even though it was 6 years after their first fight, I just the way their careers had both trended, I still thought stylistically, I'm like, it's a pretty good matchup for McGregor. I think Poirier gets hit a lot. And McGregor, when he hits people, they go down. That's I know that's a very pretty basic casual analysis, but that's really how I viewed it. I did say in my predictions, I'm like, you know, if Poirier comes out a little more tactically and uses his grappling, then it could be, you know, it could change things up a bit. But I was still surprised that he put McGregor away in the second round. I also, you know, kind of bought into the conventional narrative that, oh, well, if it's a McGregor win, it'll happen early. If it's a Poirier win, it'll happen fourth, fifth round after he wears McGregor down. And it was kind of true. It's just that he wore McGregor down a lot faster than I could have imagined. The calf kicks were just brutal. I do think the grappling that he did in the first round helped. I think it set the tone. I think it threw McGregor off. It was just a brilliant, brilliant game plan by Poirier. And he couldn't have looked better. This is probably the most watched. I guess we'll have to compare with the Khabib numbers. But this, I would imagine, it might be the most watched fight that Poirier has ever had, assuming that ESPN Plus got working around that time for you guys in America. And if that is the case, what a platform for him. And certainly, again, even compared to the Khabib fight, he won this one. And he won in an amazing, definitive fashion. He turned McGregor into a meme. It's crazy. This is the first card of the year, because we'll be talking about, I feel like this win will be one of the most memorable moments 12 months from now.
And there are options aplenty for both Conor and Dustin Poirier after that victory. But, you know, Casey, we talked about it before. You're more of the technical guy between the two of us for sure. But I really thought that Poirier landing that takedown early set the tone, because it kept Conor guessing. Like, it gave him a lot to think about. And that's what opened up the leg kick game. That's what opened up the striking up front and made Conor have to think a little bit more than, because the takedown clearly threw him off. He wasn't ready for it. He defended, he got right back to his feet, did very well in the clinch, but it still gave him something to think about. How important was that early takedown in your opinion?
Oh, very important. Very important. Coming into the fight, that's what I predicted. I predicted Dustin would take him down, hold him down for the first round, take him down the second round. And I figured, actually, I predicted a third round TKO or submission finish from Dustin. I was pretty confident that Dustin would win today. And you're right. Once you got the takedown, Conor had to think about it. Once you have to think about your opponent's grappling, it opens all your striking up. All of a sudden, a mediocre striker becomes a great striker. And Dustin Poirier is already a great striker. So it just he just became like a next level striker, essentially, after that. And then the rest after the wrestling came the calf kicks. And this wasn't Donald Cerrone. Dustin Poirier wasn't gonna go down with a shoulder strike. It was gonna take a little more than a shoulder strike tonight. And I think AKA had a good point though about how Conor wasn't ready for those leg kicks. And when Dustin, and it's just in his post-presser, talked about how much those leg kicks hurt and how those calf kicks hurt, rather, and how he experienced those in the Jim Miller fight. If you remember that fight, Dustin won that pretty handily, but Dustin had to go to the hospital afterward because his legs were so battered up. And I watched the fight, and I didn't really think his legs were that battered up, and I remember that fight because I've watched it actually recently. But they were much more painful than I realized. And Dustin going through that, he knew how much those would hurt Conor. Conor fights so infrequently now that his body just it's just not calloused enough to take the beating you need to take to fight at the high level of MMA, the durability you need to fight at the highest level of MMA. So, the experience of Dustin fighting more frequently really came and was a giant advantage for Dustin today, and it really hurt Conor.
Yeah. I mean, clearly it's just a great performance, Michael Chandler. There are a lot of great performances. So let's go to the peeps.
Ready?
Let's go to the peeps. See what they have to say. Okay. AK, let me ask you, because we sort of touched on this. Michael Chandler loves the Poirier idea, said nothing but respectful things. Love to share the octagon with him. It would just be an honor. What a great guy. And then Poirier absolutely no-sells it. Just says, nope, not interested. I'll fight anybody, but I'm not fighting Michael Chandler. What did you think of that?
Okay, I don't love it. I don't love it. I do think that Chandler is probably one of the hot right away. One of the hottest names in the UFC lightweight division. There was some buzz. Look, the UFC couldn't have done a better job of promoting Michael Chandler over the last 6-7 months or so, whenever it is that Chandler, you know, weighed in for the as an alternate for the Gaethje Khabib fight. They had the video. They had the video package for an alternate for a guy who came from Bellator. They said the words Bellator tonight. That was new. So they have done the smart thing and said, look, this guy has a fan base in another promotion. Let's use that. It'd be silly for us to try and say, oh, this is some new guy, and we're not going to talk about where he came from. So they did that brilliantly. All the video package stuff. He's always been good with the media. So he's put himself out there. So all he had to do was deliver on fight night, and he picked up an enormous win in the most exciting way possible. And he's one of the, I'd say he's probably going to be one of the three most talked about names at lightweight for the next 3 or 4 months. So it is a bit silly for Poirier to dismiss him. However, I do still think if you're Poirier, that you view Michael Chandler as someone who has more to gain from beating you than you do from beating him. So again, fair or not, that is probably how Poirier is viewing it. I think again, I don't know if he's hoping for Khabib or what fight he thinks will be bigger, or maybe he has a certain opponent in mind, like a Charles Oliveira, or if he wants to run it back with McGregor, which of course will be a more high profile opponent than anybody. And he thinks that's the best way to go for a vacant title fight, which is what I imagine Poirier would want. So I understand the justification for not wanting to fight Chandler just yet. Do I agree with it? No. But I do think that he still sees it as a bit of a low reward fight for him.
You know what I find interesting, Casey, after all of this, that Nick Diaz was a very popular name tonight, not just from Conor, because you figured after the loss, Nate would probably be like the favorite, but even Dustin Poirier threw out Nate Diaz's name. And this is a guy who we last saw in November of 2019, got beat pretty badly by Jorge Masvidal. Like it was a one-sided fight for the BMF title. Like the fight wasn't close. Like I know some people complained about the stoppage, but it wasn't going to get much better for Nate at that point. I think most people would agree with that, but isn't it just fascinating that Nate Diaz just has this ability to get in these conversations no matter what happens, win or lose? Because that was a pretty bad loss. And yet he could find himself, if Dustin Poirier plays his cards right, he could find himself possibly in a lightweight title fight. Is this crazy?
That Nate Diaz could be in a lightweight title fight? Is that what you think? Is that what you're saying?
If Dustin plays his card right and says...
Yeah, I just think that's... I was real... I mean, okay. Dustin Poirier, oh my God, you fought an amazing fight. Awesome. Man, but you're no sell of Chandler and let me fight Nate Diaz. It's just weird. I don't know. I just... I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm just confused what Dustin wants right now. Does he want, you know, a big bag of money? If it's a big bag of money he wants, then you fight Conor McGregor again for the trilogy. But that's just gonna be a fight. That's just gonna be a main event and a pay per view. Not just, you know, that's a big deal, obviously. But or you can fight for the title, and it doesn't matter who the other guy is. And he's saying Chandler shouldn't be that guy. But Chandler, outside of Conor McGregor, is the biggest guy who can justifiably be in that title shot. It's either Gaethje, Oliveira, or Chandler. And to me, Chandler being the co-main event on the biggest card of the year so far, it probably wouldn't be the top two, maybe one. Maybe it's the biggest card of the year. Who knows? I just don't get it. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean... You just went hammer and nails with Dan Hooker your last fight. You had to go to the freaking hospital afterwards in a close fought victory. Michael Chandler didn't even break a sweat over the same guy. I mean, he did enough. And this idea that he hasn't worked his way up the UFC, the guy's fought like 50 fights outside the organization or whatever. Michael Chandler has paid his dues. Just because the cage didn't have 8 sides doesn't mean like his fights don't matter. So confusing statement from Dustin Poirier. Confusing.
AK, what's the bigger fight now? Like, if the UFC were to put these two options on the table, what's a bigger fight? Like, what draws more? Dustin Poirier versus Charles Oliveira or Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler?
Oh, I thought you were going to throw Nate Diaz as there as an option, because I was going to say Nate's higher than both of them. Okay. Yeah. Whether that should be the case or not. Yes. Obviously that, you know, that's why Nate called out. So you said either Michael Chandler or Charles Oliveira. It's Chandler. It's definitely Chandler. I mean, especially tonight, he just introduced himself on a Conor McGregor card. So anyone, again, like I said, tuning in and their friggin' ESPN Plus was working, who at least caught the co-main and the main. They probably immediately in their mind, they're like, I need to see these two guys fight. I just have to. It's recency bias. But again, and I think talk build up more and when we dig deeper into the resumes, it really is also the quality of their competition and how much they've come along and what they've built up. But it makes sense in that sense as well. It's justifiable in two ways. Recency, super exciting performance tonight, and also how they fared in the lightweight division over the last 2 or 3 years. They're two of the most accomplished lightweights. You can't argue that. So yeah, it's got to be Chandler. And this just sucks so much for Oliveira, who, for whatever reason, whether it's his own shortcomings as a personality or the UFC's failure to push him, just cannot seem to register in a big way with outside of the hardcore fan base. Again, maybe he needs the right opponent. Maybe he needs to be put in this situation where he's on a big card with like a McGregor, or again, well, no, there's no Khabib, like a John Jones, someone like that. Maybe that's what finally creates a little more casual interest. But as it is, it has to be Chandler, especially after tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I think like for hardcores, people want to see Oliveira get his opportunity, but. You know, I think right now, unless Nate slides his way into like one of these fights, Oliveira is either going to get the title shot or he's a win away from it. So he's not a horrible position, but it just depends on what they ultimately end up doing. So we'll see what happens. But I was surprised Poirier reacted that way.
Yeah, just no sell. It was just like, even like, it was weird. It was odd. All right.
Let's see. Do you think Hooker's durability has finally taken its toll, or was it inevitable due to Chandler's ridiculous speed? What do you think about that, Casey? I think when you go through some of the, I mean, the two fights Dan Hooker had last year, that crazy fight with Paul Felder that people weren't even really talking about during the end of the year awards, and then obviously that crazy fight with Poirier. Do you think those wars just caught up to him, or do you think Chandler and his style and just landing that shot, the speed, Hooker just wasn't prepared for it?
I think this is when I insert that gif. It says, why not both? I think this is clearly both. I think Hooker did, unfortunately, Hooker probably did lose maybe a few years off his career. Who knows, when those two wars he fought last year. But if Hooker had fought, if Hooker had came out there and looked like Dan Hooker, how we had seen him before, I would probably think it's a durability issue. But man, but I don't know. Maybe I got to watch the fight again. But Dan Hooker did not look like Dan Hooker in there, even before he got knocked out, obviously. He just looked very timid, very, honestly, he just looked like he didn't want to be in there. Like, I don't know what it was about Chandler, but he just didn't look like he wanted to be in there with Michael Chandler tonight. So I'm hoping Hooker just maybe all these big trips during quarantine, because now he was probably in Fight Island for 2 weeks. Dustin Poirier kind of talked about how he was going crazy in his head, just staying in his, just living in his hotel room and the workout room. Maybe that just got to Hooker, because there is a giant mental aspect to this game. And Hooker just, I mean, I was picking Chandler, but man, no way did I pick this way. I mean, no way did I pick Chandler to defeat Hooker like that, or wasn't even competitive. So, yeah, a little of both. I mean, I hope this doesn't have long term effects on Dan Hooker, because him taking his gloves off and doing all that stuff, that's not good. That's all bad.
It's got to be a little frustrating for him too, and I think this might play a part in it. Not only do you have to spend the 2 weeks in Abu Dhabi, but he's not even going to be able to go home until February 21st.
Insane. Like,
that's a month. That's another month before he can go home. Yeah. That's wild. I have a feeling he's going to be. Go ahead.
Oh no! I wish they would have talked about. I wish they would have talked about that on the pay per view. Maybe they did. I didn't hear everything, but
they mentioned it. They mentioned it. Yeah.
Okay. But especially guys in New Zealand, because when they go back to New Zealand, I know like New Zealand is basically coronavirus free. So, but the reason they are is because like guys like Dan Hooker who leave the country, come back in, they're like you said, they're going to be in quarantine for I think almost a month. That is bonkers.
Very strict.
Very strict.
Very strict.
So, maybe when he was walking out there and he saw Michael Chandler across that cage and it's just like, oh crap, I have to win this. Because imagine I'm doing all this. Just a nightmare scenario for Dan Hooker. I mean, I honestly felt very bad for him. To not losing necessarily, but losing like that. Losing to get knocked out before the fight even really begins. That's just I really sympathize with Dan Hooker.
Yeah, I mean, all these sacrifices for him are worth it if you win. You know, or at least get to put in a good three rounds. You know, at least get to go the distance and maybe have a shot at fight of the night, and or add to that reputation of like what a warrior you are. For this fight to be so hyped up and then to just, there's no other way to drop a goose egg like that that's why when I heard the throwing the gloves off, I did not think retirement. I just thought, oh, he's mad, and it's all hitting him. It's all hitting him right now in this moment. All these sacrifices he made over the last 6 weeks, 3 months, whatever, however long the preparation was. And then all the sacrifices he still has to make, like we said, waiting in quarantine, hopefully with his teammates. I'm hoping that maybe that makes it a little bit easier. He has teammates. I hope he's not actually by himself. I imagine the team, they're all going back to New Zealand, we'll at least have to be together. But man, don't think that these guys can just, shut that off when they step in the octagon. It's like, oh, they just forget all that stuff. Man, that's on their minds. It's probably on his mind during fight week. It's probably on his mind during all the press conferences. It's you guys. Well, I just say we all made sacrifices in our lives. I'm sure we all have our stresses. But think about the worst stresses and bull crap you've had to deal with in your life. And that's what Dan Hooker's been dealing with over the last 3 months and now tonight and for a little bit after. So let's have some sympathy for Dan Hooker. But yeah, the wars definitely taking their toll on him. We didn't even mention the Edson Barboza fight. Remember that fight? Which probably could have been stopped.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That's a career shortener. That's a career shortener. So, yeah, and I think he just got caught too. So all that, everything we mentioned combined, plus of course the excellence of Michael Chandler, the guy hits like a truck. So I don't know. I still think we'll see. I don't think Hooker's chin is gone. I think with the right matchup, we'll still see him in these really incredible 3-round, 5-round wars. But did it factor into him getting knocked out tonight? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of
Tristan
things.
Tristan Gordet wants to know where Dan Hooker goes from here. I see two very popular options on social media, AK. Hooker versus Tony Ferguson or Hooker versus RDA. Which one do you like?
Oh, I love Tony. I like Tony. Yeah. RDA, I don't think this fight's going to happen, but I don't know. I'm still fixated on him possibly fighting Gaethje. But yeah, the Tony fight, I think it'd be great. I think it'd be good for both guys. It sounds kind of like a weird, like, oh, well, someone has to win, which is a good feeling for one of those. You know, both guys have pretty big fan bases. But really, I also mean it would just be a great fight. And whoever lost, I don't think it would hurt their reputation all that much. So this is exactly the perfect time to book these guys against each other. It was hard to book Ferguson for a while because he was in such a big win streak. Nothing besides Khabib really made sense. Now he's kind of, in a way, at least his matchmaking has been kind of liberated by you know, the slump he's in, as odd as that sounds. So would love to see that fight. But mostly, I think, Mike, like we've kind of said for Calvin Kattar, hopefully he can take some time off. Hopefully he goes home when he gets back in February, gets to see his family, hang out, spend a lot of quality time with them. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Hooker fight again until the fall, or maybe even winter of 2021.
Yeah. Where does Hooker
I was going to throw it to you, Casey, because I'm on the Ferguson train too, because especially if we're still in the same position, like 6 months from now with the pandemic and everything and the quarantines and stuff, if Dan Hooker is going to take all this time and travel and have to deal with that, I would hope he would get the biggest fight possible. And all respect to RDA, he's a former champion. There's something to be said about that. Ferguson's the bigger fight. I think he could get up a little bit more for a fight like that. So that's why I'd go with Ferguson. What say you?
Well, Dan Hooker is going to be sitting at, where does he go from here? He goes to a hotel room for a month. That's where he goes, first of all. But after he gets out of that hotel, no, I disagree with both those picks, RDA and Ferguson. I think Ferguson is going to be out of. We're not going to be talking about Dan Hooker for about 6 months, essentially. So I think the RDA and Ferguson kind of matchups won't make sense in about 6 months because I think they'll fight before that. Hooker will be on a, is it just 2-fight losing streak? Did he?
Yeah, after yeah,
he,
two fights.
Yeah, two. Yeah, so that's important. Yeah, Poirier.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, he's on a 2-fight losing streak. I think you're in a two, and especially after this loss, you don't fight a guy like RDA. You definitely don't fight a guy like Tony Ferguson. I think Dan Hooker, when he comes back, he fights a guy outside of the top 15. I think Dan Hooker has to rebuild his career. Unfortunately, he needs I don't know, anyone outside the top 15. Honestly, I can name a bunch of guys, but just I don't. I think Dan Hooker, you give him a tune-up fight when he's ready to return. Sometime I would hope at least mid to late summer. I know that's not an exciting pick, but I think that's the smart pick for Dan Hooker. If I'm a guy like Tony, even if I'm a guy like Tony Ferguson, do I want to fight a Dan Hooker, a guy fighting a 2-fight losing streak? What does Tony Ferguson gain from that?
Tony Ferguson's on a streak himself, so
yeah. Yeah. But if Tony Ferguson beats, he goes like, oh, you just beat a guy that got knocked out. He was by Chandler, got knocked, went through a war with Dustin Poirier. He's like, I don't think Tony Ferguson will want that fight, to be honest. But
you guys can't be picky. I don't think they can be picky. I mean, maybe they think they can, but they shouldn't be. And I think the matchmakers will present the reality of the situation to them. And I do think Hooker Ferguson is a good opportunity for both guys.
You think that's smart for Dan Hooker?
I don't think it's smart to compete in MMA, but here we are. So, I really, the most thing I want to see is Dan Hooker get that solid 6 months off, spend time with his family, rest, recover. And again, like I said, if we don't see him until the fourth quarter 2021, I won't complain. As a fan, you know, of course, I want to see him fight all the time. But I mean, based on him getting knocked out tonight and just his mood, his seeming mood, let's give this man a break, you know.
Dan Hooker versus Renato Moicano. That's who I want to see.
Yeah, I like it.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it doesn't get much easier outside of the top 15 because you got that. I mean, if you go, even if you get into the top 20, this we saw one tonight, Arman Tsarukyan. Like, these are the next wave. Rafael Fiziev, like, these are the next crop. These are the guys, like, just outside the top 15 that
could probably be mentioned in these. I don't want any. Yeah. There's no easy fight. At 155, top 30, there's not an easy fight. There's no such thing.
There's not an easy fight, but there are easier fights. And I don't think that's all. I think Dan Hooker needs to take a break. I think, I mean, like, a couple years ago, we weren't thinking Dan Hooker's a title contender, but he had a couple good wins. He looked exciting. So we're like, oh, Dan Hooker, he might be fighting for a title soon. He's not there yet. I don't know if he ever will be. He's clearly a very talented fighter. I don't know if he is a elite, like, top five mainstay. He might have kind of touched it for a little bit, but it might be Dan Hooker might not be as good as maybe we were hoping, I guess. So I think he should fight way behind right now in the rankings.
Who should Calderwood face next? Lauren Murphy. No.
I mean, thank you, Gino, for the question. I understand the reasoning behind it because there's a lot of flyweights now that feel like they're deserving of a title shot, doesn't it? Like, I mean, again, JoJo was booked to fight Shevchenko, so it almost seems fair that she kind of got this bounce back, a very convincing bounce back win over someone who has competed for the title recently. Shouldn't she be back in line and get that? But no, because I think Jessica Andrade jumped everyone with that win over Chikagian, right? And then we have, like we said, Lauren Murphy. Hasn't she already done enough to kind of earn a title shot? Does she have to win a fight? So those are three names that if any of them got booked to fight, Shevchenko is not officially booked to fight anyone, right?
Not officially.
I don't think, yeah. Any of those three, I favor Andrade, but if any of those three names got booked to fight her, I'd be like, it's completely fair. So I almost don't want to say any of these women should have to fight again, but I do like Gino's suggestion, because if Andrade does get that title shot, these women, I don't know if they can wait, that's great, and they should. If they can't and they have to fight again, Murphy JoJo makes a lot of sense.
I don't like that fight. I think.
Why?
Calderwood did the UFC a bit of a favor by spacing Jennifer Maia on short notice. I think if they don't book Shevchenko Andrade, which I think is totally justifiable, if they don't book that, you do Shevchenko Valentina. I think that's the fight. I'm sorry. It's very late.
guys. It's midnight. And
I think you do. I think JoJo, with her dominant win tonight, I think she had. I'll say this. I think she has earned her chance to get her ass whooped by the champ Valentina Shevchenko. That's why I think she has earned her opportunity to do it. I don't think JoJo has a legitimate shot at beating her, but I think very few fighters do. But that doesn't mean. But Valentina still has to fight. She still needs an opponent. I think Calderwood has earned that shot with that dominant performance tonight. If the UFC does not go that route, the fight I would like to see is JoJo Calderwood in a rematch at flyweight against Cynthia Calvillo. Cynthia Calvillo won a decision at strawweight, and now they're both at flyweight, so I think it's the time.
Both managed by the great Daniel Rubenstein, which should make things negotiations very easy. There's another wrinkle to this too.
Yeah.
Viviane Araújo is in this conversation now as well.
Yeah, Viviane Araújo. Yeah, she just beat up Roxy's teammate. Beat her up good too.
And I feel like, didn't she just beat up Roxy?
Yeah, she just beat up JoJo's teammate. So you got a little.
Oh, you said Roxy Steve. Okay. I know. It's so late. We're getting a lot of names. I'm not confused. I'm like, okay. Yeah. But it's weird because I view Araújo as being one fight away. I do think she needs another fight. That's the one. If somehow she emerged from this cluster of names that we just brought up, If Araújo got the title shot, that would raise my eyebrow. And I'm not sure why. Her resume, actually, if people look at it, it's limited in the UFC, but it's fairly strong. I think like 3-1, 4-1, 4-1. So it's as strong as any candidate that's sponsored. Again, the division has not been around for that long relative to other divisions. So you don't have anyone who's like 10-1 and at flyweight, except for Shevchenko eventually. But still, I don't know why I view Araújo as being one fight away. So maybe you throw her in the mix and she fights one of the names you mentioned, but it's weird. I don't feel any of the names you mentioned should have to beat her to get a title shot. So someone's heart is getting broken. Unless all these women can afford to wait, then great. I have a feeling they can't. It's a division that it moved a lot in 2020, and I think it's going to keep moving a lot in 2021. So, like I said, that's why the initial question, I got no problem with it.
You know what, but this
yeah,
is good.
I don't mean Araújo is in the title conversation right the second. I mean, just like with the Calderwood option or somebody of that nature. Like if they in the Calvillos, like she's in that conversation. Like if they booked two of those three women to fight, all of those make sense to me.
Hey, sure. And in only 2 weeks, we got Alexa Grasso versus Macy Barber too. So we're gonna throw some more names in there too pretty soon. Hey,
stop it.
Yep. Yeah. The women's flyweight division, they just kind of say a couple years ago was whatever. But now things are coming along. Now Valentina, she's got a lot of new names, a lot of new prospects. I think UFC is actually finally doing a good job at getting the women's flyweight division going. And it's exciting actually.
Some bantamweights came down. Some strawweights moved up. They did a very, very good job signing people out of like Invictus from some of the international promotions. We just saw Manon Fiorot, who looks awesome.
Who knows how good she is?
2022 could be a name we're talking about a lot as a contender in 2022. So yeah, I mean, I think we've said this a lot. Like last year, women's flyweight was one of the more entertaining and interesting divisions to watch.
I mean, and you got Tyler Santos, you got Miranda Maverick coming up, who's fighting Jillian Robertson soon. I mean, 25 is looking pretty good right now.
It really is. I'm excited about it.
What else we got? Easy to say in hindsight, but I think Hibas didn't deserve to be such a favorite against Rodriguez. What is next for her? I assume we're thinking about Amanda Hibas here. Yeah, I mean, I think a pretty fair narrative, and I think we all said this, that we thought Rodriguez was completely flying under the radar in this fight.
Yep.
So the lines were a little crazy. But man, first round went pretty much the way I thought the whole fight was going to go. But all she needed was one shot and changed everything, and she got not one but two knockouts in one fight. So we'll start with UAK, because we're probably not going to talk about her and on to the next one unless it's a wild card. But where does Amanda Hibas go from here?
-345 favorite?
Crazy Amanda talk.
What? I didn't remember that. I thought it was like 2-1. -2, -3, over a 3-1. What are we doing? What are we doing as the society, people? This is, and I don't know what Mike, do you have any idea what the initial line was? I bet it was smaller, and probably a lot of money came in on Kibas, right? Probably. Is that a safe bet?
Keep talking. I will look it up.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, again, I can't imagine it. Well, I can't imagine it started. Go ahead, Casey.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the Tapology numbers on this, and by Tapology's user votes for predictions,
yeah,
Hibas Rodriguez is like one of the biggest upsets probably of the year. 93% of people picked Hibas to win. 93%.
That's a lot of people.
And only so 7% picked Rodriguez, and of that, a very small, like a little tiny sliver actually picked her to win by KO or TKO. Yeah. Unreal.
You picked Rodriguez to win by decision, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. You did pick Rodriguez, so you are of that 7%. On Tapology.
I think Rodriguez is an amazing fighter. I don't get it. People just forget about her?
There's a draw. It's like people are like, oh, winless in her last two. You know, there's a draw in there. There's a very, very close loss to Esparza, which some people thought she won.
I thought she won.
And then and And then you have Hibas, who's 4-0 and the undefeated in the UFC, getting this big push. This is a classic case of how you get kind of odds that don't reflect, you know, perhaps the actual skill and performance of the fighters. Which is not to say that Hibas isn't very good. She is very good.
She is very good.
I think, but she's also young. I think people, you know, we kind of like marvel at how young she is. 27 is it's just getting there in your prime for MMA, but it's not quite in your prime. Compared to Rodriguez, who's quite a few years older, but in a good way, more older and more experienced, and her body's probably a little more where it is in her physical prime, right? So there's a lot of those little things to consider. Also, Hibas comes from we see this all the time. Comes from a black belt, present jiu-jitsu, black belt in judo background, strong grappler. Who's shown a lot of striking ability in the UFC. She looked great. I remember in the Mackenzie Dern fight, she picked her apart. Make of that what you will. But Rodriguez is clearly the better striker. She was the better striker in paper going in. So it's one of those things, you get a little too far away from your base discipline and you pay for it. And that happens. That's a lesson to be learned. She's gonna figure out in the future what striking she should stick with, what striking maybe again got her into this trouble, and then again how much to how to re-implement her grappling in, and she'll be better off for it. This is if anything, I think it's a good loss for her, a great win for Rodriguez, and I think a good loss for Hibas for her for what she might learn from it.
I think you rebook.
Yeah, I can't find him.
Yeah, I think you book rebook Hibas versus Michelle Waterson. I think I would still pick Hibas. Is that the fight that was the original fight? That was the original fight, right?
That was one of them. And I think it's Esparza was in talks before that.
And I think Hibas actually beats Esparza and Michelle Waterson. I'm just that high on Marina Rodriguez. And I'm happy I was right tonight. But I think Hibas, I'm not trying to crap on Hibas. I think she's awesome too. And she, with a good performance, maybe I could see Hibas beating Rodriguez eventually. But right now, Hibas isn't there. But I think Rodriguez is, oh man, I just love her striking. She is so violent. Oh, I love her.
Yeah, fun to watch.
Why not give Marina the Michelle Waterson fight?
That would work too, sir.
I think she may have. It would, unless you think she's kind of already jumped over her. I don't think I put her ahead of her in the rankings, but I don't know, man. Yeah, you know, and I'm trying to see what's ahead of that.
But Michelle Waterson is one of those fighters, though. She might be behind you in rankings, but you get more fans to watch. And even though Michelle is behind her, I think that's a good fight for either of them.
Michelle's one.
Also, maybe, and we might.
Rodriguez is 8, Waterson 7.
Yeah, you could still do that. It makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know if she's quite leapfrogged. If she has, though, maybe, and I think we brought this up as an option on a previous, onto the next one, Mike. Maybe Yan Xiaonan. Maybe she fights Yan. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
That would be big for, and that would also again just be a really fun style matchup. Actually, just a fight I'd really like to see.
Oh gosh,
yeah, that's a good an option as well.
What do you got, guys? What else have we got? Okay.
Oh, here we go.
Good luck reading this one, Mike.
Connor Dustin.
Good luck reading this one.
Connor Dustin, I got it. Connor Dustin, Ferguson, Gaethje, Oliveira, and now Chandler is the guy to beat Khabib. Do you guys see the trend? I honestly don't think any of them has anything for Khabib. Hard to argue with that. I mean, I just don't think, anybody can beat Khabib. I just don't. I agree.
I thought Gaethje was going to be a hell of a test. And yeah, it was like we saw what happened. Oliveira is going to be interesting. Oliveira will be really interesting, but I still think Khabib whoops up on him. At least to Chandler. Chandler is the one. There's something interesting about Chandler, though, because like, how would Khabib beat Chandler? I mean, I know he'll take him down, submit him, I guess, eventually. But I can't. It's a hard time visualizing in my head. Even though I would definitely pick Khabib if Khabib Chandler got booked. If Khabib came out of retirement, if he broke the promise he made to his mother to fight Michael Chandler,
broke her heart.
Sorry, Mom. I gotta fight Michael Chandler. I can't do this. It's trending big, Mom. It's trending big. Oh my God.
I agree. That, I mean, I would still, if of those names, if I had to pick one who I think has a chance, and again, if I were setting the odds myself, none of these guys would be closer than like minus 350. If I'm being honest, I'm sorry, I say Khabib would be a minus 250 favorite at the very least against any of these names. I still like Oliveira. I still think Del Bronx, just that ground game, man. It's funny because Oliveira has lost fights on the ground. But I want to believe he's finally found that consistency. Maybe he's just lucky. Maybe we're just seeing a coin land on heads 8 times in a row, you know, but there's definitely a better maturity there. I think his skills are at their peak right now. So that to me is still the fight I would want to see, out of the names that Muhammad has listed here. But I agree. No, I think any of them have a realistic chance of beating Khabib right now? No. Khabib is the best.
Agreed. What was your guy's face expressions when Dustin knocked out Connor? I don't know. My face is freezing a couple of times here, so yeah. Probably one of those faces you saw was likely. I mean, like I said earlier, after there was a point in that first round where Connor landed a big shot, Dustin ate it, and then he returned fire, and then he like pointed at Connor. That was the moment where I felt the tide was really turning, and I was surprised, but it wasn't like I was more surprised at Chandler's knockout than Poirier's, if that makes sense. I don't know how you guys were looking at it.
I picked both.
I definitely. Sorry. Oh, go ahead, Casey.
I picked both Chandler.
Let's see the face.
Oh my face.
Oh, and the gesture. Yeah.
It's like fucking I will say this. Half of my overjoyed expression was because that put me over the top in the staff picks. So because me and AK were tied going to the main event.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
so, that was not Scott. That was you got me. That was
I got you.
Like, I kind of AK.
No, but
I was definitely okay. Yeah.
I was just super shocked because remember when Connor fought Mayweather and the ref basically saved Connor from a giant knockout because you know right before Connor was on wobbly legs, he was gassed. The ref was like, "All right, we're done here." Before we got a big knockout, and I felt this and like it saved Connor because in our head we still hadn't seen Connor get like really like boom, you're out cold, knocked out. It was hard to visualize. But I felt like tonight was the night it was going to happen. I felt like Connor was going to just take a big ass whooping. And it was just, it's crazy to see. Like, it was like the first time we saw Anderson get knocked out. And like, we're like, whoa, all right. Like, it was just, he got knocked out. I can't believe I saw that. The first time we saw when Otto got knocked out, I was like, whoa, like I've never, I couldn't visualize that, but there it is. And that's why I felt like when I finally saw Connor get knocked out with strikes, we've seen him get submitted, all that stuff, but to get just, boom, boom. All right, you done. It was just, it was a wild moment as a fan to watch that to me.
Yeah, I was, I definitely had one of these.
I did the DC thing, you stood up.
No, I'm working obviously, but, yeah. But so I kind of just looked up. I didn't see the finish coming because, we saw he had been stinging him with those leg kicks. And it's like, oh, man, those kicks are really taking a toll on him. And like as I was saying that, Poirier pounced perfectly and then started flurrying. And then, like, my face was gradually – it wasn't like – it was like, oh. So that was my exact reaction. This is what you want to see how it develops. So that was like my exact reaction. Because, like you said, I was just surprised. But as it happened, I'm like, you know what? That made sense. Like everything that unfolded there made a lot of sense based on Poirier's game plan, which was just awesome. And man, the sight of McGregor lying just like prone on the ground, which has now become the hot meme. Bundled up Bernie, you had your day, you had your 24 hours. Bundled up Bernie has now been replaced by Sleeping Connor. It was a good run, and some people have already, of course, put them together. Yeah. So well done, internet, you win again. But yes, the new hot meme, Sleeping Connor. So looks so peaceful there after getting punched in the face like six really hard times by Dustin Poirier.
Mm. All right.
Oh, I may have to dip in a second.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're wrapping.
Let's do one more.
Have to help with.
Let's do one more. Let's do one more question.
One more. All right. Let me get a good one. Wow, we've talked 45 minutes. Oh my goodness.
It's a time Time flies. You have these amazing questions. You have our viewers, our faithful viewers who are like us, have probably been watching or talking about MMA for the last like 12 hours plus the rest of the week. You guys are the best. I know we're good. But I just want to say that before we sign off. You guys watching, I say this all the time, but I mean it. You guys are the freaking best.
All right.
One more do we have a Connor question?
I'm trying to find. Yeah, because come on, guys. Give me a Connor question. Give me a Connor question.
No one cares about Conor McGregor.
Yeah, he's old news. He's old news.
No one talks about him. No one wants to see him fight anymore. No one has any questions. Okay.
That's not a question. I just had him standing there.
Of course you would. Yeah, thank you, Zach. I mean, you know. Yeah, Zach knows. Come on, guys. Get that last question in. I know some of you have been spamming questions. Just keep that spam coming. Finish.
Not a spam.
See it. Yeah, no, we have a lot of our regular
Mr.
viewers.
Mr. Bozo, we're talking about Connor. We're not talking about anyone else right now.
Okay.
This is actually slightly interesting. Yeah. I don't think it'll happen, but
McGregor versus Hooker.
McGregor's not getting out of bed for that fight. I'm sorry. It sounds like we've been pretty hard on Hooker, but again, that's the nature of the game. It's funny when you lose a fight. You had two of the best fights of the friggin' year in 2020, and then you lose one fight, and suddenly we're removing you from the big fight conversation. That's sort of happened. So should they match up McGregor and Hooker? Shinigami, I just don't see it. Would it be a cool fight? Hell yeah, it'd be a cool fight. Maybe if by some chance there's a New Zealand show. And you convince McGregor it'd be a nice family vacation to go there, but I don't know.
Here's our final question before we take a nap for the morning. So,
What is Conor McGregor's most realistic path back to the title? This is a really good question, actually.
Yeah,
this is a really good question.
That is good.
AK, you go.
I'll go first. I'll go quick. Go get one of those Paul brothers. Take out one of those Paul brothers, because let me tell you something. Those guys, I should say, which one's undefeated? Jake. Logan's already had a loss. He lost to KSI. You know what? That guy's old news. Jake, he just smoked a three-time NBA dunk contest champion. All right. McGregor goes, takes him out, easy work. And then that gets him the Pacquiao fight. And then that gets him a title shot at whoever happens to be holding the belts in either late 2021 or early 2022. I'm mostly joking, and yet somehow, if those things did happen, I do think McGregor would just jump right back into the UFC with no UFC wins and be like, "I'm back. Give me that belt." Hate to say it.
Wait, are you saying he beats Pacquiao in a boxing match? Is that what you just said?
I think I did. I think I did just say that. I'm not going to walk it back.
It's getting late.
I just said it. It's getting really late.
So AK's theory is...
I can't take it back. I'm on the record. I can't take it back.
So AK, your theory is for Conor McGregor to get a shot back at the 155-pound UFC championship, he needs to go to boxing. He needs to face the undefeated Paul brother, whichever one that is. And then he needs to face Manny Pacquiao in a boxing match.
Yes.
Defeat
Manny Pacquiao. And win.
Yes. And then after being 2-1 in boxing, his overall record, he will come back and get a title shot. Against who though? Yeah. Who will be the title holder by that point?
Michael Chandler.
Whoa.
look, Gunny98 asked for the most realistic path. Clearly I've picked the most realistic path back for McGregor. So I'm on the record. Clip it, put it out in the socials. I said what I said.
You earned it, sir. All right, Mr. Heck, what do you got?
The most realistic path back to the title is Dustin Poirier winning the title. So that's first thing. Dustin Poirier needs to beat whoever he fights for the belt. That sets things up perfectly. I think Connor's best option is he fights Nate. If he beats Nate, Connor's back of it. He can go on this trilogy tour. And I don't think Connor's that far out of it. I don't, especially if Dustin Poirier has to win the undisputed title, though. Dustin Poirier wins the undisputed title. I think Connolly needs another win, an impressive win, and some fire on the microphone, and he's right back in there because there's plenty of story here, and Dustin would take that fight in a second. Dustin having a win over Connor, plus winning the undisputed title, that gives him some sway. And if Connor can get a win, put himself in that position, I don't think he's that far off. I don't think he's that far off, honestly. He's Connor freaking McGregor, but Dustin has to win the belt first. That's what I think.
I think all Connor needs to do to get a shot at the title, not to actually win it, but just to get a shot at the title, is I think he needs a dominant victory over Nate Diaz at lightweight. That's it. Nothing's fair. This isn't fair, but I think a victory, a dominant victory, a finish over Nate Diaz will get him that title shot. And whoever's holding the belt at that time, I don't think it really matters. I think it helps if it's Dustin having the belt, but if Dustin isn't the belt holder, I don't think it really matters. So yeah,
life is not fair sometimes.
Oh man!
If you're Charles Oliveira and you're Justin Gaethje, put pen to paper and do it quickly. That's my advice.
I know we said last question, but man, I want to get your opinions on this. At 55, I assume.
I saw someone mention this.
I kind of forgot about this. I've been saying Max Holloway at 55 is a top five lightweight. He went hammer and nails with Dustin Poirier in a very competitive fight. That was his first time ever at lightweight, where his body was, he was just a featherweight who didn't cut weight. He didn't bulk up to lightweight. So man, Max Holloway at lightweight against Conor McGregor, rematch. Ooh, I like that. I'm picking Max though.
Yes, that's it. That's my answer. Yes, I would watch.
Would watch.
Oh, hell yeah, I'd watch that fight. Are you kidding me? I would watch Max Holloway against anybody.
I would watch this Holloway over anything, right, actually. Now. Over Connor versus anyone else, over Nate, over Dustin, over Gaethje. Actually, this fight, I like this fight. In a boxing match.
Well, I mean, Isaiah, I will credit you if we use this.
Yeah, I hope so.
Isaiah and Nate, I will credit you.
Yes. All right.
I have a feeling that'll be a popular choice. But there you go. We could talk for way longer, but you guys probably want to go to sleep.
We just got started. We're 15 minutes into this, and we just got started. It's like,
I know. Well, listen, those pressers can be a beating sometimes.
Yeah.
But there you go. All right, we're done. UFC 257. I'm not going to say it's in the books. Then we put a bow on it because we still have way more to talk about. We got on to the next one. We got Between the Links. We got ASAD live chat. I'm sure we're going to be talking about this. I mean, just so much. So much. In the meantime, for AK, for EKC Lydon, I am Mike Kapp. Thank you so much for watching all the coverage. Big shout out to Jose Youngs, by the way. What a gangster he is on his way home. Safe travels to you, Jose. Good morning. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.